Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings. Welcome back. I am Jasper William Cartwright. And with me today, as always, is...
Luyando Nati Lewis Nyao, but everybody calls me Unati.
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but James Lloyd calls me Buttery. Buttery Cobb.
Buttery Cobb. Hey, man, who doesn't like a buttery cob?
I like my cobs buttered, if you know what I mean.
There is no buttery other way to have a cob.
I guess you could have, you could have it plain, but who wants a dry cob?
This is fully broken, you know.
You want that cob to be nice and lubed up with butter, with animal fats.
I think that's it, is that the dry cob... If it's cooked well, it should be a little bit, you know, it's going to be a little bit textured for me, you know?
Yeah, you need a,
it's got a little bit of bite to it.
Yeah, you want a juicy
a
cup.
Bit of, if it's... A bit of, you want a bit of browning on the top, so you need the butter,
Yeah,
the butter.
Gotta have the butter, it brings the flavor.
Yeah, I'm gonna...
Season your cobs.
Season your cobs, everyone. We season ours. We actually have to season it before every episode.
They put me in a pan, roll me around in butter, throw on all kinds of different spices to get a nice golden brown going.
Like literally, when Unati talks about getting that, spice, that seasoning, she's literally talking about what she does to Jeremy before every episode. Just.
It's deeply spiritual and also deeply sexual.
Welcome back, everyone, to Three Black Train Wrecks. We've started the year as we need to go
Two
on.
Two black train wrecks and one browned cob.
You are not delicious!
Listen to us talk about fat art in episode 3.
Let's make them even more black.
Oh my god!
Vandal in the broom!
Lemming, teachable moment.
Yeah. Full prince vibe? Woof.
Is this the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon?
That's disgusting and I love it.
We're about to get into something real big now. Don't make me change the name of the show because I will. But this is our first time back recording, and as you can hear, nothing has changed. We did not take the week off that we had to think about things and pull ourselves together. No, quite the opposite. But thank you so much. Who was our lovely patron who submitted that name again?
That was James Lloyd.
Thank you, James Lloyd.
Thank you, James Lloyd, for that gift. That was an absolute gift.
And actually, just a reminder to everyone out there, you too can suggest a nickname for me if you join our Patreon. There is a post on the Patreon. Any existing patrons who have not yet suggested a nickname, you can suggest as many as you want. There's no limit.
Every single one
that I'm willing to say, I will say at some point.
Yeah. And, so, you know, we're not going to stop doing this for a while, so keep going. Keep them coming.
Yeah. Please.
Excellent.
Please, I need that. That's good.
Marvelous. So, yeah, like I said, this is the first time we've been recording since we've come back from our little hiatus, little break. We just released the Zako Yama episode, and we can finally talk about that.
Whew. Yeah.
But a big shout out on that episode, so we've all been trying to keep it secret. As secret as possible so that we didn't spoil the surprise.
I wanted it to be a surprise for my friend Leo. For those of you who haven't listened, basically a friend who loves Zako Yama, loves all things Zako Yama and also every show that he's ever been on. So,
yeah. And I wanted to talk about, firstly, the show has been going crazy. For all of you people listening, thank you so much. Over the break, I was expecting, you know, just no one, you know, people just be like, cool, you know, everyone's on a break. But hell, you kept listening. It's crazy. And the figures we're getting this week, and, you know, it's been insane. So just a huge thank you to anyone who's out there who's listening and who's shared the show or has just discovered us. If you've just discovered us, then welcome. Hello. And I hope you stick around.
Hi.
There will be plenty more shenanigans to be had in the new year. And so, yeah, how are you two? Although I haven't spoken to you as much in the new year, but then it is only like 8 days in.
Yeah. And right, I'm good. Just tired, working, hustling. That's it.
That's it. Doesn't stop.
Yep, doesn't stop. Yep. You, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm both good and busy.
Good.
I would say. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, today, in addition to this, I think I have a solid 7 hours straight of recording. Or podcasting stuff for various things.
Wow.
It's a full and exciting day.
Good.
That is amazing. That is amazing. Jeremy's in here with that marathon.
Yeah. It's bad.
I've been training.
Yeah. I actually saw him lifting weights just for the podcasting. It was impressive. It was an impressive display. So we are back this week with another episode where we're going to be discussing an article. It is a Wired article. We will put the link, as always, in the description below that goes into sort of talking about Curse of Strahd Revamped, Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, and basically digging into the sort of as is the name of the article, the long overdue racial reckoning within within Dungeons and Dragons. It was a very interesting article, which I think a few people have pointed out to us, and Jeremy had posted it in our group for us to discuss, and so we're here. And I thought, to sort of kick us off, why don't we go around each of us and just sort of give a brief little this was my response, I guess, to the article. I feel like that's probably the easiest way, and then we can kind of go through the sort of minutiae of certain points. I'm just kind of interested to know what you guys thought about certain parts of the article. Jeremy, do you want to go first, since you were the one that found it?
Sure. First, I have a couple of shout-outs. First, shout-out to Taylor Lewis, my buddy Taylor Lewis, for sending me this article in the first place. And also, shout-out to Matthew Galt, who was the writer of this article that came out on December 31st of 2020. So there you go. Got it right in at the end of the year. And my response was, ooh, this is really interesting. That was my actual response. And then I read the whole thing and I thought, yeah, that is really interesting. And I thought that the article makes many salient points. And also, I think there were some parts that I was not entirely clear on, specifically in regards to what people would have preferred. Because the article essentially talks about the changes. First of all, it talks about D&D's new prominence. And then it also talks about the changes that Wizards of the Coast have recently been making to try and make the game less discriminatory, such as changes to the way that the Vistani in Curse of Strahd are depicted, and also the way that the evil races in D&D are depicted, and also just changing the way that racial ability scores work. Racial ability score increases, that is. And the article overall seems pretty negative about it. Not that the changes themselves are bad, but I think the article acknowledges that while the changes are positive, that they don't go far enough. The first thing they talk about is the Curse of Strahd campaign, the Vistani. I have only really played like a heavily homebrewed version of an intro mini campaign to Curse of Strahd that I left literally the session that we got to the Death House, which is, if you ever read Curse of Strahd, the first thing that happens in Curse of Strahd. Yeah. And then the only other time I've actually played that, anything to do with that module, was on this show when Unati did like a heavily condensed version of a dungeon crawl through Strahd's castle. Element of like mystery or intrigue, all of that stuff that's part of, I think, a core part of the main mechanic. I think we met a couple of Vistani, but there was nothing. Yes. I don't even think they introduced themselves as Vistani. The Vistani that I met were not the ones in the actual campaign, so I can't actually comment that much on how they're depicted. Although, based on the descriptions, it does sound like the original description and depiction of them was very stereotypical in a negative way. And so I think it's good that they changed it. However, the article indicates that apparently the changes have not gone far enough that they didn't actually, they basically changed a line in the description, I believe.
Yeah. And they took out some unhelpful dialogue, I believe.
Yeah, and one sort of word that links to, is a word for caravan in Roman, in Romani. Yeah.
Vardo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Vardo.
Yeah. So because I haven't actually played the module, and I don't know, I know that there's like, I know that I read something previously about there, you can meet some drunk Vistani at some point, and basically the depiction is negative throughout the campaign. Mm. If they haven't changed that, then I would agree that they have not gone far enough. However, I wasn't entirely clear if the article was saying that they hadn't changed enough of that, or if it almost seemed like the article may have been suggesting that the fact that the Romani were clearly a reference, excuse me, the Vistani were clearly a reference to the Romani people was an issue, which I don't know that I necessarily agree with as much, because maybe this is just me coming from an American or coming to this as an American/British person. But if I played a fantasy game in which a group of people were clearly based on American/British people, provided there were not provided it was not an exclusively negative stereotype of these groups, I don't know that I would necessarily have an issue with it, because it would just be like, oh yeah, we liked certain elements of this culture, or we felt like this culture fit with the story that we were trying to tell. Therefore, we have this group of people that happens to be based on that culture. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you're doing a Dracula story, how do you do it without like having references to some of the people from the original book?
And from the region, I would also go as far to say, if you like, want to take me back all the way to Carmen.
I mean, Romania.
I mean, like, come on,
it's in the name.
It's a bit crazy.
I guess to sum that Romani point up/Vistani point is that. If the stereotypes that are depicted are negative, then I completely agree with what they're saying, that it did not go far enough. If there are still a bunch of just negative stereotypes of these people, then I completely agree. However, I don't agree with the idea that simply depicting a culture, period, in a way that is clearly referencing an existing culture is wrong.
No, I hear that. Yonati, do you want to throw out some thoughts?
I think that the thing, okay, I mean, all of those points are completely valid, and I agree with you there, Jeremy, but what I kind of walked away with slightly depressed was the two POC employees that had spent some time actually working there. And I mean, I wasn't necessarily surprised, because that is how like large businesses and large creative entities function. It's difficult to change things. It isn't just like a flash in the pan thing. You can't just do it immediately and radically change everything. But that just left me a little bit disheartened. That's conjecture as well. Those are personal people's experiences, which I'm absolutely not trying to minimize, and I'm not saying they're not true, especially since Wizards of the Coast did come out and apologize on a public forum like Twitter about them. But yeah, those are the things that kind of left me feeling a little bit despondent. I guess because I've been through the Curse of Strahd, like trying to like just find like what are the juicy bits here to try and do over a 4-hour period. I think that if we're talking about, you know, nomadic kind of travelers, and that reference to the Romani people, I think that there are a lot of deeply entrenched negative stereotypes that still remain in the book. And I think that a lot of the time when they're being stolen from, or they're encountering drunk belligerence, or things that people would like equate to travelers, and even in the UK, you know what I mean? Like, like it's not just the words. It's not just like an odd word. It's, you know,
it is the actions that it suggests for you as a DM in that scenario.
Exactly. Yeah. And it directly mimics the prejudice that traveling peoples experience virtually mm-hmm. anywhere. I mean, I've only really encountered them in the UK, but it's those stereotypes that they face all the time, everywhere, yeah. and even in their own countries.
I can attest to that because I've been to yeah. I've spent a whole semester in the Czech Republic. I've been around to multiple during that time. I went around a lot to a lot of Europe. It was really funny because I would speak to people in the Czech Republic who would talk about being against racism, and then as yeah. soon as you mentioned the Romani people, they'd be like, "Oh no, but they're bad."
Yeah,
and it was just
yeah.
like, "Whoa, what?" Oh, these are people
wild.
Like my age.
It's wild. And I mean, I think that I understand, like, it's the other thing that kind of irks me, and please somebody out there correct me if I'm wrong, because it's a big book. But I don't think I really encountered another character, i.e. like, you know, some, like an Esmeralda type, like one of the sort of more positively viewed characters. They could have just given you more positive characters. You can like, if there's just like, there's barely any positivity at all mm-hmm. coming from that camp. You know, like,
yeah, that's not good.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they're kind of couched. Yes, of course, they work for Strahd, but surely there has to be somebody good, right? Like, do you know what I mean?
They don't have
like,
a choice but to work for Strahd.
I mean, yes, exactly. Whole...
Exactly. They don't, it's not, and I don't think it goes far enough to frame it that way. Yeah, in the lore and the reasons why they help him, and some people who maybe disagree with him, but it doesn't go far enough to give you someone that, so not just one, like, you know, token character, but allow for, even if there was like a faction that was trying to revolt inside of it, like trying to go mm-hmm. against working for Strahd, I would take that. But like, yeah. there's nothing.
Or even if some of the ones who are committing crimes or carousing or whatever, yeah. if you actually have backstories explaining why? Like they're living in a hellscape.
Yeah, it's a literal hellscape.
Of course, they have no choice but to resort to these kinds of activities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what else are you gonna do?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And I mean,
and also yeah. I'm pretty sure there's like so much within the book that's about like the sort of oppressive nature of like the mists, which literally mm-hmm. makes you negative. Do you know yeah. what I mean? Like, yeah. like yeah. everyone there is literally being actively oppressed by yeah. this sort of dark force, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I guess, what I'm trying to say is that on the other side, yes, there are other awful people who aren't necessarily Vistani, but, the other people that, In this, on the other side, where the people aren't necessarily Livistani, there are also people who would be characterized as good or anti-hero. Mm. And I don't think there's any room, there's very limited room within the Vistani for that. But please correct me if I'm wrong, because it's a massive book.
Yes, it is. It is. Mm. So I'll throw out some of my sort of thoughts, and I think this is good, actually. I think we've all taken away something different, or like the sort of big thing. And the big thing for me was the fact that what it pointed out was that at the core of the game, there is an issue. The very kind of core of the game and what it enables, what it has enabled players to do for such a long time, that to sort of change it, we're talking about, as we are in society, talking about genuinely systemic change, like the actual system itself needs to adapt in order to actually house some of the kind of more, the sort of larger scale changes that are needed in order to make the game feel more welcoming. And that was a really interesting thing for me, because I think that's something that I've sort of acknowledged, but it's I mean, it's tricky, right? Like, do you mean that you know, when you enjoy something or you love something, it's difficult to then sort of look at it in a I guess especially before this podcast, but it's difficult to look at it in that sort of objective or critical way. And I think that it makes a really good point in this, which is that Wizards of the Coast sometimes fall into a bit of the trap of allowing the fans to do the work kind of for them, in that there are so many fantastic resources now to use. You know, I was seeing there's an ancestry and culture, an alternative race system in D&D 5e, which someone has made, which is available on the DMs Guild, I believe. Is that the yeah. website? Yeah, the DMs Guild, which I would definitely get people to check out.
Yeah,
There's multiple examples like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I looked some up earlier this year,
and I think. So here's my thinking on that topic, which is that there are two sort of reasons why I think Wizards maybe struggle or would struggle to do that, which is that like the very core of the game, the very core of the fans, sort of outside of this new wave of of fans that have come along, like the article points out with like Critical Role and with Stranger Things, is that is what those people want. Like the core of this game is what they want. The sort of the core fans of this system, they want the structure of the game as it is now. So I think that's one of the issues they're running into. I think the other issue is that quite a lot with I mean, 2020 was a perfect example. When you like peek under the sort of hood, you see everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't then pretend it's not there anymore. And you can't put the lid back on the can, sort of thing. You can't, you know, close Pandora's box. And part of me thinks that actually, if you were to take this is a 70-page book of alternative rules on culture and ancestry. That is because there is that much that needs to be addressed. And I think the issue this article takes is the fact that there's one page which kind of actively addresses playing races against their stereotypes. And I think that obviously there's a lot more work needs to go into it. But with this, it kind of feels like if they really seriously sit down and try to address these things, that'll probably be all they do for like a year. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of effort to really go back and re-examine things, because they have been built up over time and over a very varied time in terms of, you know what I mean? I almost feel like this needs to be like 6E. Do you know what I mean? This is going to need to be like the next iteration of the game to in order, like I said, to sort of to allow for this kind of change.
Yeah, no,
I actually. Sorry, go ahead, Unati.
Because just to draw a parallel to like, you know, diversity roundtables that we have around acting, it just reminded me of the exact same thing. Like it's grand to have a diversity roundtable. D&D had a similar one, but I guess it's that issue of making sure that the rooms are as diverse as you want the thing to be, and that's why those two stories from those two creators really kind of made me a bit sad, because it was just like, okay, well, you've brought people in your capacity. Yeah. You're not bad people. No one's calling these people bad people. I'm
calling you out, Wizard of the Coast.
But you know, if you're gonna do that, you're gonna have to start listening to the people that you've brought into the room. Yeah, you can't just go, oh, that's really cool, and then not listen to it.
So here's what I would say on that, and that is that I have some experience now of being inside of large corporations, who have, and I've done this multiple times, across multiple different, you know, I think about theatre companies I've worked with, I think about jobs that I've had otherwise, where you have a predominantly, well, in most cases, an all-white executive board or executive group and it very clearly states in this, or at least the experiences was for these two individuals, was that there was two people that were making the sort of final decisions.
Yeah.
There was, and so no matter how well-intentioned those two people were, if that is not a diverse two people, which is almost impossible, right? Because you can't even begin.
It was Mike Merles and Jeremy Crawford.
Jeremy Crawford. And so, you know, ultimately, you would need more than two people anyway to be able to make sort of a varied and genuinely sort of diverse choice. But if there is then a lack of diversity within that group, there is only so much that they can do. And this is not to say that is not an excuse by any means, because you have to acknowledge that, right? Yeah. It's really important that you acknowledge that. But if you, in that scenario, you're only going to be drawing from your own personal experiences. And so if you can't actually put yourself in the shoes of someone else and understand why something may be an issue, or understand why something might be taken in a certain way, then you're just going to keep coming up against the same issues. We're going to keep butting heads against the same issues. We're going to keep doing half measures. And I really speak from experience when I know the frustration that comes with that. I know the frustration where it feels like we've got a set of rules here. We've got an idea. We know exactly what we need to do.
Yeah.
There's just this slow reluctance to do it because it's away from a norm or it's away from a standard.
Yeah, yeah, from how things have been done. But just make the... I'm saying is just make the table bigger, right? You know, like...
That's exactly
these,
it.
These
that's
are tabletop
exactly
RPGs, you know, just add another six seater to your table. Increase the capacity.
Yeah, increase the chairs.
Yeah.
This conversation is very ironic because Jasper is actually talking about his time working for Unati's jewel mining business.
Which,
those of you who don't know this, you know Unati hired an all-white board, very deliberately hired.
Yeah, very deliberately.
And but then got me in as like the CEO. So I'm supposed to be making all decisions, but I'm not. I'm actually beholden to an all-white executive board. And it's an extremely frustrating situation to be in. Yeah, exactly. Unati looks and goes, "Well, white business is successful, so I have white people, please."
Simple math,
yo. Yeah.
Just add
whites, and then you get that privilege.
Yeah,
we
need a few Todds in the room. We can't do this. You know what I mean? You got to have a Todd. There's always got to be a Todd.
Few Connors.
Connor, yeah, yeah.
Big love to any Todds and Connors.
We love you. We love you very much.
We love you. Thank you.
I did want to actually jump in and say, see, that was a part that first of all, I want to say I 100% agree with Unati that I think the most solid takeaway for me from the article was that there are still clearly a lot of problems within the company itself that are clearly... they may be trying to address, but that is the going is slower than I think anyone would prefer. In regards to the actual fundamental issues with the game, that is messier to me because I don't actually see an inherent, like the complaint, one of the complaints that Austin Walker, who I think I had heard of because he's the host of Friends at the Table, which is a show that actually, another shout out to Taylor Lewis, has been trying to get me to listen to for a long time. Apparently a very, very good podcast, D&D podcast. But there is, he mentions that the fifth edition is a game about killing people. And he says that's one of the fundamental issues and that you would need to revisit that as a core design element. The reason being because any DM basically it's a lot easier to just have, especially at lower levels or just some random mooks that you can throw out and be like, yeah, fight these people. And because of the lineage of where D&D comes from, especially with Lord of the Rings, you have the orcs, you have the goblins, you have the kobolds, and you have all the different goblinoids. Like those are your easy, or the drow in D&D's case, like the easier you have just
easier
the easy races to be like, no, these guys are all bad. You can fight some of them.
Yeah.
They're bad.
Yeah.
And that is a dangerous pit to fall into. However, I don't know that I have an issue with a game that is fundamentally about killing people, because that describes most video games.
A lot of
the
games.
The vast majority of video games.
Like a lot of games.
I think
I want to ask, I've never played a Doom game, and I know that game is purely about killing.
How much criticism does Doom
get for its racial depictions of the demons that you're killing?
Sure. This is a legitimate question.
I don't know.
Oh, right. Go ahead. You're not.
Honestly, as you asked me that question, I don't really think very much, but I mean, they are very much clearly hellscape friggin' demons. Like, I think it's kind of accepted that they're demons. Like, they're
right.
Awful.
What I would say to that, Jeremy, is that I think that perhaps within video games there is a more heightened sense of control, whereas with D&D you are relying on DMs, right? You're relying on DMs and GMs to make the kind of calls. So like with Doom, you can very clearly depict every single thing as like absolutely a hellscape monster. So the kind of morality then of like killing that thing is sort of not to question. Also with a video game, you can make characters, you can make characters do certain things which will clearly label them as a bad person that needs to be removed from the world.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Right. I think that the kind of the issue that you have is that, and I think this is where I agree with you, where I don't necessarily think there is a core problem in terms of killing things, because I do think that it is the onus then, or the onus is, at least at the moment, and I think that's part of what the issue of the article has, the onus at the moment is on the DMs to kind of get that bit right. I think to make sure they're depicting things in a fair and balanced way. Mm-hmm. That if you're whacking on goblins, you're also kind of whacking on other things for the same reasons, or for, do you know what I mean? Or mm-hmm. Ultimately for justified reasons, right? And I think that is the sort of issue for me, is that I think in the sort of the conversation that we have at the moment, it's sort of like, I don't have a problem with necessarily like harming other creatures or doing that, because I do think that is a part of the game. But I do think that there is, the onus shouldn't be on the people that play it to make something non-problematic.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree in this. If what you're referring to specifically is the issue of D&D, of Wizards of the Coast changing the way that the quote unquote evil races are depicted, I completely agree. I don't think anybody is questioning that needs to change. I think what is happening in my head is I'm going through every single thing that I know of past editions of D&D, how D&D used to be played. Granted, I started playing very recently. I started playing the end of 2018. But prior to that, I believe it was prior to that, yes, I had already seen there's a couple of internet movies that are relatively internet famous, a series called The Gamers. And I'd seen The Gamers for the first one. I'd seen The Gamers, I can't remember if, yeah, I think Gamers Darkness Rising is the second one. I'd seen Gamers 3, Hands of Fate. Like, I'd seen, and those are depictions, less so the third one, but the first two are depictions of how people used to play D&D, and in many cases still very much do play D&D. And it's there's a lot less of an emphasis on role play and much more of an emphasis on going on quests, fighting bad guys, saving the kingdom and getting loot, because people just wanted to go on a cool quest. I don't necessarily see anything wrong with that, but I understand that legacy is still built into the game in a very real way. And I don't think the idea of really RP driven campaigns, I mean, it obviously existed, but I don't think it got as prominent until the advent of Critical Role, specifically Critical Role. That I think that the popularity of that show transformed the way that a lot of other people thought of D&D. I think it's very doable to do it within, if you take a typical D&D campaign that's just people going on quests, you meet a couple of NPCs, but you know what? You got a group of murder hobos. They just like killing people. The DM, everybody's just having a good old time. It's a low emotional investment, high fun times campaign. I think in a campaign like that, it can be more difficult to then depict a more developed society of people that you are fighting against, because the people involved aren't necessarily interested in getting to know the bad guys. As far as they're concerned, you just point me where I need to go and I'll kill the thing. I think that style of play is not necessarily wrong, but I think going back to your earlier point, Jasper, I think what actually would need to happen is I think it's going to take a long time, because even if they were to institute some of these changes, I think a huge part of the mainstream D&D fan base would backlash, because think a lot of, we've discovered this as we've started to get some slight mainstream D&D exposure, is that there are people, I think the establishment, the stereotypical classic white male D&D players, a lot of them, certainly not all, but a lot of them really don't like the idea of having all this stuff change. Because to them, this is how it makes sense. I like the way that you have these people who are good, these people who are bad, and then these people who are kind of in between. And it's very, you know, and these people get these bonuses and those people get those minuses and all this. Like, they like the way that
sorry. Sorry.
But I, at the same time, I think that if they were to institute all of these changes right away, they would run the risk of alienating a major part of the actual, but a major, major part of the fan base. And I think changes that were instituted would have to be probably incremental if they didn't want to just straight up cause a potential mass exodus.
Well, that's exactly what I meant, I think, by the sort of the Pandora's box, you know, of opening that sort of thing, because I do think that you will absolutely run the risk of alienating a lot of people who want that core experience exactly as they want that core experience. And I think it's a tricky one, because I think that for me as well, there's a huge, huge difference between home games and between stream games. Like, I think that makes a huge difference. And that is not to say that things are are more acceptable in a home game, but I think that
actually. Like, because you're playing with a group of people who are going to cut you way more slack. That's the answer.
I mean is, and I'm not saying that it's necessarily okay to stereotype in home games. That's what I'm kind of saying.
I'm
saying sure about the slack. Yeah, absolutely. You can get things wrong in a home game, right? And
you
rectify it very easily, which you can't get wrong in a stream. But I think that moreover, it's about the fact that, you know, you are surrounded by a group of people. You know these group of people usually pretty well. You'll know certain things that are okay and aren't okay. And as long as you're being a sensitive DM, then there are much less issues. Whereas I feel like there is a very big deal for me when it comes to stream games, when it comes to stuff that's written in the books, because then we are talking about what people are going to physically like read and see and take in and ingest. And I think that for... as we can all speak as nerds who were once very young and fresh-faced nerds, you know, you do read stuff like that and take it in, and it affects who you sort of are. We've all spoken on this show about, you know, me and all of us have spoken about, feeling like we wanted to be Legolas when we were like younger, but then it's never quite the same, or it's not right because Legolas is a white dude. And so I do think there is an acknowledgement from Wizards of the Coast that is the case and that they have to do that. But I feel like the transition, like you said, is difficult. I think it is a difficult transition. And I think it's a little bit more difficult than the article suggests, purely because I think that, it's not just like I said, I feel like it'd be more suited to just bring out 6e with a fundamental change in certain things.
Yeah.
Because outside of that,
the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Outside of that, I don't know that like a single source book is going to fix it. And I don't really think, I think maybe some overzealous people online may have said this. We certainly didn't say this. Like, one source book was never going to be the thing that changed it, right?
Yeah.
Like, we very much said, like, oh, this is a good start. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Tasha's is a good start. Like, it's a place to kick on. And I completely agree with the two of you that the experiences of people within the actual building itself is the concerning part, because that's the bit that I think we all thought, surely we're past that bit now.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, surely if you're... Do you know what I... It's just, I'm not mad, I'm disappointed.
But I think...
Go. I was going to ask, I recently was watching some clips of the new Baldur's Gate 3, and a lot of them involve goblins and drow, and all of those goblins have that classic, like, oh, hello there! Sort of like evil little chimney sweep voice.
Mm-hmm.
Evil little high pitched cockney voice. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, step in time.
I want to eat your brains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was wondering, because we're talking, it seems like we may not necessarily agree that the mechanics are the issue. I think it sounds like we agree that the lore is more the issue, and how that lore then influences the racial ability score bonuses and so on and so forth. I feel like a lore overhaul still probably would require another edition, because you're basically then having to retcon a bunch of stuff into the Forgotten Realms. But like, let's say that we now say that, okay, we're jumping forward in time in the Forgotten Realms, and actually, now the goblins are very well known for their scholarship, and there's like this huge goblin metropolis, sprawling goblin metropolis, where like these brilliant goblin scientists have been working stuff out, and you say, oh yeah, and in fact, actually, the orcs have developed some incredible seafaring technology, and they, you know, there are these merchants now, and now you have all these orcs in like robes wheeling and dealing and stuff, and it becomes like, and they have a really rich culture because they're trading with everybody. Like, I think that if you were to overhaul that element of it, I think that kind of thing would probably not result in the same kinds of issues as being like, we're going to change the whole point of the game. But I think people would still get mad, but I don't know that you'd see the same massive negative impact.
There'd be a lot of butthurt people, though. Like, a lot of butthurt.
Yeah, there would be a lot.
There would be a lot. I think that within that scenario that you've just outlined there, Jeremy, and very well, is that it would be harder... let me know if you don't disagree. If you disagree, sorry, but like, it would be harder to, it'd be a lot easier. Am I saying that right? No, it would be a lot harder to accidentally fall into the traps that we have outlined 100 times on this show, with stereotyping, with making people feel uncomfortable at the table, with generalizing, all of those things. Mm-hmm. If you had the foundations of the thing were made up of something overall more inclusive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like the struggle of trying to now like reclaim things like Lord of the Rings, etc. like that. Like, we can't change the foundation of the thing because it's written in paper and the author is dead. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Whereas you're absolutely right, in like a new edition or something, they absolutely could not even necessarily retcon things, but there are certain things that obviously absolutely need to be retconned, but you could like just introduce so much more, like a wealth of different sort of things which we just haven't had on addition. And I think that would go, you're absolutely right, I think changing the foundations of the thing might be the more useful thing, because I agree with you that I think the mechanics are so easily changeable for me, you know, as in I feel like from DM to DM, like reading your table and knowing what they are comfortable with, what they're not comfortable with, feels like a much easier thing than the lore side of it, where like I even now as a DM go like, well, Jesus, I don't even know where to start. it's like there is so much that I should know, don't know, don't want, need to change. Do you know what I mean? Like, whereas if I just decide, like, my players, you know, there's so many useful help, like, you know, useful tools that you can use for having less combat, you know, making combat quicker, making combat less, more roleplay heavy, more stealth heavy, etc. like that. And I don't necessarily know if that has to come from wizards. But the other stuff, should do for sure.
Yeah. No, for sure. I just, I guess it just reminds me that it reminds me of that. I'm going to probably bastardize this, but it reminds me of that saying that was like flowing around last year. It's not enough only to be like uncomfortable about racism or like, racism is bad. We have to be anti-racist now. Like, we have to actually carve it out. And that is a very difficult process. And it involves people coming to meet themselves in a vulnerable way. All of us, black, white, Asian, Indian, all of us meeting ourselves in an uncomfortable space. Because, I mean, this game is long established. It's like, whatever, you know, 50 odd years old now. But what I'm scared, I think that wizards shouldn't necessarily be too comfortable on their laurels, because it could just as easily come along that somebody makes a system that everybody gets on board with and the new generation of players just leaves them behind.
Well, I think there are. I think there are.
I mean, they're out there. And I'm just like, guys, if you
Pathfinder.
If you don't come to the party, people are just going to go, well, if you're not going to do it, we've already been doing it anyway, you know, Unearthed Arcana, all that stuff. We might as well just.
And. Yeah, I think, do you know what? I think you're absolutely right, Unati. I think, you've nailed it, because I can't think of, like, outside of the fact that I think it is, I don't necessarily think it's even that accessible. I think I've played other TTRPGs that are more accessible. Like, you can just pick them up and go, boom, I know this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it does take a bit of work, and definitely if you want to, like, DM, you have to really, like, know your stuff. And so I agree, because I do think actually there are TTRPGs out there which are more accessible and probably more accessible for a broader audience. And actually, I think people already, with the general popularity of D&D, as that happens, it's just going to be the case that more people are going to go, oh, actually, I quite enjoy playing tabletop role-playing games. Why don't I have a look at what other ones are out
anymore?
There? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think that's a very natural process. And I think that absolutely will happen if this doesn't start to... Because exactly, if you're meeting D&D for the first time and one of the first things you see is this Wired article, you're going to go, okay. Ooh, I know for a fact, if I had seen this before I'd come into contact with D&D, if I saw this article, I'd have been like, I'm standing there.
Hell away from here.
I am standing there. Hell away from here. Which is genuinely an issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think one of the main reasons we wanted to talk about it on the, you know, a lot of stuff on this show is because we want D&D to be a space. We want it to be a shining light. We want it to be a place where everyone feels welcome and everyone feels comfortable, and we don't turn people away because they feel... this isn't really for me, you know?
Yeah.
Or what was it, Unati, you said ages ago? Is that white people shit?
Exactly. Yeah.
It's still one of my favorite quotes of the show.
Yeah, is that, and that's because every time I encounter people of color, it's always like, well, not every time, but a lot of the times, so is that white people shit? Because it has
every,
been that
every single time,
every
you meet a person of color, they're like, is this that white people shit? And you're like, hey, what are you talking about?
Wait, hang on.
What are you talking about?
This is just
you're talking about D&D?
This is just a peanut butter and jam sandwich. Do you want ham?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not even just talking about D&D. They're talking about anything.
Is that why? Is that white people shit?
Could you open the door? Sorry, could you get the door?
Is that white people
is
shit?
Is that that?
No, we have doors too.
Do we have doors? It's okay.
We have doors. No, we don't. We have hanging tar or like carpet. That, like, right? That's how.
Yeah.
That's how it works in you know.
Yeah.
Mud huts and cloth.
Yeah.
Guys, this is a side point, but I was recently watching a video about pre-contact dogs, by which I mean dogs that existed in the Americas prior to Europeans coming over, there weren't very many domesticatable animals already in the Americas. There were like two, like literally llamas and guinea pigs, and humans brought dogs over with them, and there was a group of people who had, because there were no sheep, they had bred dogs that grew really long, thick white fur, and they would shear these dogs and use the dog's fur as their version of wool. So there were these like I think they're referred to as wool dogs. But you can see pictures of them. They're extinct now. All of these breeds are extinct because diseases, as it turns out, old world diseases hit canines harder than they hit people, if that was even possible. And that's so a lot of these, almost all of the breeds are have completely died out. But that, so you can see a picture though of a few of them, and they're very, very cute.
I found a picture of a false killer whale the other day. Holy crap. That thing is scary.
Is it?
It is like, it is not okay. It's like that sea
pseudorca.
Lion video.
They call them pseudorcas, right?
Pseudorcas. Oh, is that what I just seen false killer whale.
Yeah, there's both names.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah,
wow. There are more animals out there than I think. There is, it's wild. It's a wild place out there.
Aw, that's a cutie pie. Oh, okay.
Look at the teeth. Look at the teeth.
I'm okay.
It's not cute.
I mean, it's cute in the picture, but you ain't going to see me in the sea, so I ain't stressed.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair. I also found out today how much a male saltwater crocodile weighs.
Mm.
And it is absolutely mind-blowing. No. Mind-blowing.
Because
we're watching a video of a zoo in the UK. They do these like live videos where they like ask for donations because obviously it's like lockdown, so no one's going, and they need donations to like keep them afloat. And they had these two crocs, and they were like, "Oh, these are like 30 stone, basically." And I was like, "Excuse me? Did you say 30 stone? That's a lot." And then and they were like, "Oh yeah, you know they're much smaller than the saltwater crocodile counterparts." I was like, "They can't be 150 stone."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my.
For those of you who are Americans, one stone is the equivalent of 14 pounds. So multiply.
I believe in pounds, it was something like 2. It was like 2,000 or something stupid.
Yeah,
like
they weigh literally over a ton.
Yeah.
Literally over a
wild.
Ton. These are gigantic reptiles.
Leave them alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Stay the hell away.
Well, as long as they leave us alone. Them. I think
that's
which is really the I think honestly most people do prefer to leave them alone.
No desire.
not okay. So what we're saying is that Wizards of the Coast needs to make an entirely crocodile TTRPG.
If
you only have one race, then you will
and
inherently
crocodiles.
Have everyone's crocodiles.
Yeah.
Then it will be you make that a diverse range of crocodiles. Mm-hmm. Some crocodiles are good, some crocodiles are bad, some of them go to school, some of them don't, some of them, do crime, some of them don't.
Yeah.
It's diverse. It's
you
great.
Have some crime crocs, you have crime some cop crocs.
Yeah. Cop crocs. Cook crocs.
Yeah, cook crocs. Wow. Yeah.
Wow, this went off. This went off the
this
deep.
This is bizarre.
I know. This is really weird. Like, system. I can't even.
Of all
like,
the
like,
jokes
like,
to make
to...
in all crocodile systems.
I'm trying to track.
I'll listen to that back, and if it was if I still feel like it was a funny joke,
please
then I'll
keep
leave it
in.
If not, yeah.
keep it in.
I'm just working out. I'm trying to work out how we like did the quantum leap.
I don't know how we got there. I'll be honest.
So you guys were talking about. I don't remember how I got on the. I somehow
I don't know how you got to wool dogs.
It was people. You were saying that people like native peoples from all over the world have all kinds of stuff that people don't even realize that they had. And that reminded me of these people had developed wool dogs.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how we got from that to pseudorcas and crocodiles. I did see a video of a dog getting eaten by a crocodile once. It was very sad.
We're going to end this topic there.
Honestly, the people, they were dumb owners. They used to let this dog run down and bark at the crocodiles. And they were like, ha, 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 it's funny because, the crocodiles swim away. Well,
it's irresponsible pet ownership.
So the dog ran down there, started barking, and next thing you know, and he's gone.
I'm a crocodile.
It was a small dog, too. It was not a hefty dog. It was a very small dog.
These things have been around for a while. Yeah. They don't. It's not because they don't just kill and if something is in their way or a potential threat, they're just going to kill it.
Yeah.
Exceptionally good at killing.
Yeah.
Exceptionally.
Yeah.
Good.
They are predators. Apex predators. Apex.
That croc had time today. That's what it was. The croc
had time. It's like what today I can
clear
make
my schedule for this.
Yeah, I got it.
Oh,
R.I.P. Fluffy.
Oh, snap.
We really need to find a way of getting the boatman back in. But anyway, that is a discussion for a different time. I genuinely feel like we could probably do like a part two of this discussion.
We should talk more about this article. We were having a good discussion before we off-roaded there.
Yeah. It's fine. That was only like a 5 minute off-road, so that's not too bad for us. It's not too bad for us.
It's true.
But there's like a lot in here that I think we could dig into, and I think that
like Tenet.
Maybe that maybe what would be a sort of fun experience, I guess, is if we were to have a little think about and maybe if people, you know, if you have any opinions about this, I would really like for our listeners to read the article as well and share your thoughts with us. A great place to do that is on the Discord, just because we tend to pick stuff up there and we get some really 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 cool conversations on there, so that might be a good place for it. But just because I think that there was this really interesting argument between sort of substantive mechanical change versus like law change. And I'm really interested to know what people think about that. I think, you know, I feel like I'm erring on the side of law change than just core mechanical change. Because I think that actually what they introduced in Tasha's gives you enough tools. You could do with a few more, but gives you enough tools, I think, to now make a pretty varied version of like anything, any sort of races, any of the species or races or classes that you'll find.
I think especially if they were to change some of if they were to change the racial ABIs, get rid of any sort of mental ones. So get rid of intelligence, charisma, or wisdom and have those instead tied to class. And then maybe have skills like dexterity and strength more inherently tied to size as opposed to specific race. Because I have no issue saying on average a 3 foot tall person who has no sort of physical impediments is going to be more nimble than like a 7 foot tall person. That's just kind of how that works. That's physics.
Absolutely.
Then also give the opportunity to change those if a person wants to.
And I think because this is one of the big things that I was thinking about was that I think it should be more background tied. I think there should be a bigger emphasis on background. I feel like background still for me feels like such a last, like literally whenever I'm making a character, I do everything and then I go, oh yeah, I've got to change I'll pick a background. I just do it because like I want a dragon dice set. Or, do you know what I mean? Or whatever it is. I'm just like, yeah, it's fine. But actually I think that background for me feels like the biggest informer of that,
who you
If you are a if you are an orc who has spent their entire time living in being brought up in a monastery or in a library,
you might sing everything.
And you also might not.
Shout out to Henry.
Shout out to Henry.
The person we play with who has an orc monk who sings.
Who sings everything. But you might not have developed physically in the same way that other orcs may have, so therefore your strength would not be comparable to that of an orc who has been a soldier warrior all of their life and done nothing but
does CrossFit
CrossFit and lift do you know what I mean? And so I think, you know, we're not absolutely not saying that there is not mechanical changes that can happen that would make the game more accessible and potentially make it better, but I think that there is an interesting discussion to be had here about the substantive law change of this thing, because it informs a huge part of it. And I think that, like I said, I just think that what the onus of Wizards of the Coast has to be is to take the pressure off of the players of the game, that includes players and DMs when I say that, to not make mistakes. Like that feels the wrong way round for me. I don't feel like it should be on the players to skirt around things that exist in order to not make mistakes and offend people. You know, that would be my big...
That you shouldn't, and that, like a video game, they shouldn't have to mod your game in order for it to not be to be offensive.
Exactly. Within a video game, you shouldn't have to try and skip a level because it makes you feel uncomfortable to play that. Because that's effectively what people are doing. Do you know what I mean? You will take, you know, if you were to take Curse of Strahd, you would effectively trying to be desperately skipping the Vistani parts.
Oh, I skipped a lot
of that.
You'd
have to rewrite the... Yeah, you'd have to rewrite the...
You'd have to rewrite the... You'd have to rewrite stuff.
I literally skipped loads of it. I played the madam who gave the tarot reading very differently. I allowed them to show you the path and didn't, like, venture into them at all. Mm. I was like, nah.
You put on that Super Mario hat with the wings and just flew straight over.
Like, yeah, straight over.
Touching that.
Yeah.
Let's just go like kill Strahd.
It's like that gif. It's like that gif of Shaq where he's just batting stuff away.
Yeah.
Just, nah, it's just there. Get rid of that. Not today. Okay.
Yeah. Manute Bol? No, never mind. There was a famous basketball player. I can't remember. Hakeem Olajuwon, maybe, who always used to go, he always used to shake one finger when he block a shot. And he was like an incredible, like he was like 7 foot something. He was incredible at blocking shots. And
jeez. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. So yes, I think there will be more discussion to come on this particular topic. Mm. And I think definitely a future episode to dig into what substantive, maybe that could be an episode, is what substantive mechanical and what law changes might we make in order to improve the game and make it more accessible. But thank you very much for listening to this episode of Three Black Halflings. I hope that you've enjoyed it as always. And we will catch you next week.
Consider the Patreon, by the way. I'm just going to keep plugging that Patreon. I'm pro Patreon right now.
Yeah, we're pro Patreon right here.
If you are interested in helping to support the show, please go to patreon.com/tbhalflings and toss us a tiny bone.
Yeah, and then I can finally let Jeremy and Jasper go on leave. They've been working so hard for me at my conglomerate. They haven't had any off days.
Yes, I have what may be permanent nerve damage in my hands from having to work with all of this mining equipment.
And on that note, so long, Shire folk.
So long, Shire folk. Okay!